what was the Paris Hilton reality show from like the early 2000s? Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie.
The Simple Life. Yes. It's very big in middle school.
With the chihuahua in her purse. I'm pretty sure she took that chihuahua into clubs. Maybe the dog's deaf.
That's what I hope. Paris Hilton is a DJ now, so maybe that dog's gotten used to it. That's like the ultimate fail son thing. Like Tom Cruise's son is a DJ. Like if you're a multimillionaire fail son, just go be a DJ. Like you're just charging your friends to party with you.
It's your fallback career. And you get paid more than $7.25 probably.
Don Jr. could have the best. He's DJ DJ.
Oh God. It's gonna be so bad. I bet he's mostly gonna do like God Bless the USA remixes.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.
Hello everyone and welcome to Pot of the South, a production of Change Tennessee. Pull up a chair and refill your sweet tea as we peel back the layers of Southern politics to get a better understanding of what's going on and why it matters. My name is Gabe, and joining me today is again our latest addition to the pod family and Knoxville's gayest forger of shiny math rocks, Maggie Loveday.
Hey y'all, how's it going?
Today for our conversation, we are joined by a third generation union member and the communications and political director for the AFL-CIO, Alyssa Hansen.
Hey, thanks to y'all for having me here today. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us, Alyssa. And if the organization didn't give it away, we're actually going to take a dive into worker and laborer rights in Tennessee. We are quite the state for labor and worker rights. There's a lot to get into because of how lovely our state is. But before we dive into what we can do for the workers across the state, what's something that you feel needs a good spotlight, Alyssa?
I think one of the biggest things right now, and you know, I know some folks have heard about it, some it may be new information, but if you've been paying any attention to the Tennessee legislature that just wrapped up in early May, one of the biggest pieces of legislation that we were fighting was the constitutional amendment that would enshrine right to work into, well, no pun intended, our state's constitution. It has to go through two different general assemblies, which unfortunately now it has, and then it'll go before voters in now November of 2022. We can talk about that obviously later on as well, but I think that's one of the biggest things that folks need to know about because lawmakers won't be voting on it in a year and a half. The people of Tennessee, the voters of Tennessee will be voting on it. And when that comes up, we ask all voters to vote no. But again, we can get into that in more depth later, but that's one of the biggest things that we're facing right now on a state level.
It's actually really interesting that you said we will get into this. I mean, that's a big part of what's going on in Tennessee. But the fact that they're doing it as a constitutional amendment, really banking on the voters to carry it. It feels very California Prop 25. I believe it was Prop 25, the gig worker. I'm going to look into the crystal ball here and feel like there's going to be some shenanigans like that going on.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because you hear so many, or at least we heard uptown, you hear so many Republicans touting how the Constitution is so sacred and why should we mess with it? And, you know, it should only be tampered with in the most, you know, specific of circumstances. Well, what does enshrining a law, you know, that's been on the books since 1947 and has done literally nothing but, you know, make life more difficult for working families? Why do we want to uplift that and enshrine it? It makes no sense. And when you hear just that repeated, you know, rhetoric of it's so sacred, but oh, by the way, we want to put this in. You know, it's just, it's unbelievably frustrating, not only for the state federation, but for the people we represent, for working families, to know that this is what lawmakers are focused on, especially in a pandemic. I mean, hopefully the end of a pandemic, but it's just the focus is so out of touch. It's ridiculous.
I can go off on constitutions, especially the United States Constitution particularly is a lovely subject. We think these constitutions are so great and these, like you said, these holy documents, but they're written in a very specific way to give these grand ideas. But when you start looking between the lines, it's like, oh, you mean all of this for the ruling class. You don't actually care or want anyone else to have a voice.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's funny, you know, I don't want our whole conversation to focus on the Constitution, but doing my homework back in January when the legislative session started, the current version of the Tennessee Constitution that's been used pretty much since Reconstruction and the end of the Civil War, I think it had been amended only, I want to say, 9 times since the 1870s. And most of those amendments came from 1950 to the present. So that just kind of shows you, you know, in a quick glance, how less sacred maybe that document's become over time. And, you know, hey, let's just put anything in it or take anything out. Who cares? So that was just really striking to me when I found that out.
It also shows how outdated it is.
Very true. Yeah.
That's the one thing when people are like, oh, the Constitution. And I'm like, yeah, the Constitution that was written 200 something years ago. Yeah, that's still relevant.
In our state legislature episode, Drew, as the constitutional historian that he is, learned me some things on the Tennessee Constitution particularly. But yeah, let's not dwell too much on here. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll take a quick break, and as soon as we come back, we'll dive right in. Our sponsor this week, Charles Koch, is a big supporter of laborers all over the country, especially when he needs to charter private flights to import workers from Texas to the Koch Industries Pine Bend oil refinery in Minnesota. Regardless of how many safety measures are ignored, keeping people working is his number one priority. Charles Koch, the only thing I like more than laborers are cheap laborers. Thank you for joining us again. To start this conversation on labor rights, we're going to start big picture at the national level. And kind of the big thing right now in the national conversation in terms of a legislative approach to it is the PRO Act, or the Protect the Right to Organize Act. And we just kind of want to give a brief overview of what it is. That way people can kind of get an understanding of what's going on at the top and how that might affect them at the state level. There's two kind of big things that the PRO Act touches on. Is it kind of attacks the gig economy and formalizes it a little more as a way for laborers to organize. And then also comes after the right to work ideology that's become super popular, especially here in the South. So listen, can you kind of just give us a quick breakdown on what the PRO Act would mean for people?
Sure. You touched on two of the biggest things. And obviously one of those is that it would repeal right to work laws in the states that have them. And I want to say we're up now to 27 states nationwide that do have right to work laws. So that's one of the biggest things. It would repeal right to work laws. And like you said, too, it would also make it easier for workers in the gig economy, people who drive for Uber and Lyft, things like that. It would make it easier for them to organize, because before this legislation, they never really had sort of a clear pathway to do that. But it also makes it easier for all workers to organize and exercise their right to bargain together. And it also cracks down on anti-union employers. It prevents these employers from hiring permanent replacements for striking workers. It strengthens the NLRB so that, you know, employers can't retaliate against workers who talk about wanting to organize or form a union. So it does several things, but really the biggest, you know, I guess the top line message I would want folks to know is that it's the biggest piece of worker empowerment legislation in almost a century. This is huge. You know, it's talked about nationally, on a state level, and then locally as well. But, you know, this would be huge, huge labor law reform that we haven't seen in, like I said, almost a century. And it's also civil rights legislation. Union contracts are one of the best tools that we have to close some of those racial and gender wage gaps. And the more folks with the union contract, the more avenues they have to close those gaps. So like I said, the top line message would definitely be that, I mean, this is the biggest worker empowerment legislation in pretty much all of our lifetimes.
You touched a big thing on making it easier for everyone to unionize. If we go back, you know, 30, 40 years, I mean, union participation has just like fallen off a cliff. They've been demonized and just made to think that unions will be the nail in the coffin for the American dream. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, where you see unions, you see some of the healthiest economies. And it's especially interesting considering that union support is at an all-time high right now, especially since the great time period of Reaganomics that, you know, really kind of just gutted out kind of the last legs that unions were standing on. I forgot where it was, but it was something like over 60% of Americans are in favor of unions right now. Who knows about the validity of polls? I mean, as we've kind of seen, the polling industry hasn't been the most accurate, but 60%, even at, you know, with a 5-point margin of error, that's still a huge chunk of the American population. It's well above the majority. It would beat the filibuster if that's how we actually got things done.
And it's not even a healthy economy when it comes to union workers. You also see healthier people that are in unions because they have better benefits for them and their families. And that's super important for when you're looking at your workplace environment. You want somewhere where the people are healthy and the work that's getting done is good. That's part of why that pro-union has become so big, is because we see a lot of people not getting the benefits they need and their workers' environment is poor.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that really sort of drove, I don't want to say a resurgence, but sort of maybe a renewed interest in unions is the pandemic. I think a lot of folks just realized, especially those who worked in union workplaces during the pandemic, the difference that belonging to a union makes. And I mean, so many union members are also essential workers. So I just think the past year alone has really sort of driven that renewed interest in unions. And I mean, Gabe, like you were saying, when over 60% of the population has a positive view of unions, I mean, how do you argue with that and say they're bad and they're the boogeyman? I mean, it's just, it's funny. I mean, I'll just get a little personal for a second. I grew up in Pittsburgh. Labor was huge there. I always had a big Labor Day parade, marched in it with my family. You know, it wasn't bad to say the word union, you know, take your kid to work day. I went, you know, to work with my grandfather, who was president of Labor's Local 1058 in Pittsburgh. But then, you know, I moved down here to Tennessee back in, oh gosh, almost 10 years ago now. And it's just, it's funny the difference just in the culture of, you know, oh, we don't say union. I mean, just the perception's different. And it's just been, it's eye-opening to see, but it also shows how much I think labor's needed here.
Yeah. On top of don't say the word union, don't talk about your pay, don't talk about like whether or not you've gotten a raise or the other people in your department haven't gotten raises. That was really big in one of the most recent jobs that I had that I worked in for the longest, in animal welfare. You weren't supposed to talk about that kind of thing. And animal welfare would benefit greatly from unionizing because of how hard it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's exactly what you mentioned is one of the things that some folks don't understand is that, no, you are allowed to talk about those things. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that. And that's one of the things we have to work on changing.
And we were greatly fearful of talking about that because of the CEO of our company, who is on the city council here in Knoxville.
If you can't talk about something, it's only going to benefit the fat cat, you know, the big boss, because you don't know that you're getting paid 25 cents less than your coworker. So that's cost savings. You know, that's going to help the owners or the CEO's bonus at the end of the year. Meanwhile, the union members or the laborers are 90% of driving that business, but they don't get to benefit from it. And that's, again, you know, like we're saying, that's where the unions will come in. And that's why there's all this support for it, because labor is what makes the world turn. Alyssa, like what you were saying, labor is the essential worker.
The thing that I remember most was when one of our managers went in to specifically talk about raising our minimum wage to $15 an hour, because at the animal shelter I was working at, everyone was minimum wage, essentially. They barely got paid above that. And it's not exactly an easy job being either almost bitten by dogs, almost bitten by cats, and scooping both dog and cat poop. And he was like, these people deserve $15 an hour. They're doing a job that is obviously not easy and they deserve it. And the CEO goes, they just need to stop whining.
See, and that's one of the phrases, I guess you could say, that, you know, employers always use. But I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, you almost want to say, okay, well then, you know, you survive on $7.25 an hour. I mean, we've got a disgustingly low minimum wage and you want to go and make comments like that? I mean, come on.
I was 100% like, okay, how do I unionize this group? Because you come scoop the poop and you tell me that you don't deserve $15 an hour.
Maggie, you bring up a really great point talking about, you know, them asking for that $15 minimum wage, because that's kind of what inflation has led to, what a living wage is. We're not talking about a comfortable wage, living, alive, what the bare minimum of what it takes to put a roof over your head, to put food on the table. We're not asking, you know, on this whole Fight for 15 movement, you know, they're not asking for enough money to go out and buy a Ferrari. The fight is saying, hey, we want to be able to live. We want to be able to survive. And, you know, that $7.25 minimum wage that you referenced, Alyssa, that's what it was back in 2008. That was 13 years ago.
Yeah, it hasn't moved.
Scary.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And when you factor in inflation, like, that minimum wage should be over $15. And during this, while worker wages have completely stagnated over the past 13 years, CEO compensation has gone out the wazoo. On paper salary, yeah, it's not that great. I mean, our fearless leader, Jeff Bezos, his salary is only about $80,000. But they're able to finagle the financial system to where he's still pulling in billions of dollars. It's not like Amazon's barely getting by. We know they're making billions of dollars. Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, these companies are making billions of dollars. Yet their workers are getting paid squat comparatively to these CEOs and this executive class.
One of the biggest representations for anti-unionization when I was a kid was always Walmart. And that's why my mom said, we're not shopping at Walmart. They're anti-union.
Mine did the same thing.
They're also just a terrible company in general too. Their products aren't great and they kill mom and pop shops and all that jazz. But they're also anti-union. But my mom was always like, I was like, Mom, why do we go to Walmart? And she was like, because they're anti-union and their stuff sucks. We're going over here. And I'd be like, okay, Mom.
No, we did the same thing in my house growing up too. And I make sure my husband, you know, we still do it to this day. So, but no, Gabe, I think, you know, what you were talking about with CEO pay, I mean, it's just, you know, the average S&P 500 CEO in Tennessee makes almost 300 times what a worker makes. And I mean, though I think nationwide, I want to say it's about 264 times what the average worker makes. And I mean, you put that in perspective and it's just, it's almost difficult to even wrap your head around it when there's folks, you know, here in our state and across the country who are working, you know, sometimes 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet. But like you said, these people are asking to be paid a living wage, not a minimum wage, a living wage. And they're not going out looking to buy a Ferrari or go on vacation, some exotic vacation, you know, nothing like that. It's just, we want to be able to provide a basic but decent standard of living for our families.
And even if they wanted to be able to save up for a nicer car for their family or a nicer vacation over time, that's not something that you should fault them for, having a living wage so that eventually they could do something nice for themselves and their family. That's what you as a CEO get to do every day. So why can't we have those basic nice things too? Like, that's the thing that always drives me insane is people are like, oh, well, they have like really nice phones and, you know, this person has a nice car. And I'm like, that person lives in a trailer that is currently like actually decomposing because they've had it for longer than 5 years. And the fact that they have a car is because that was something that was easier to invest in than buying a home. That's not a negative towards them. You know, they don't have that ability to be able to invest in the home because they don't have a living wage. It's super common in this area of just Tennessee in general. I mean, you could drive through trailer parks and you're going to end up seeing really nice cars. It's not because they're drug dealers. It's not because of anything else. It's because they couldn't afford to invest in a home, but at the time they could afford to invest in that car.
So I work in manufacturing as my day job. This CEO compensation, this is like a perfect microcosm of it. The owner of our company, a buddy of his got a shiny new boat, like 4 feet bigger than his boat. Well, he couldn't be outdone by his friend. So he turned around and bought a bigger boat. Well, now that his friend who had a bigger boat couldn't be outdone by him, so he got a bigger boat.
Oh my God.
And literally within the course of like 3 or 4 months, these guys bought and sold like two or three boats each. They went from like 30s, like low 30, like 28 to like 32 foot boats to almost a 50 foot boat. All to be done on the Tennessee River, not even going out on open water or anything. Meanwhile, all that we got for being employees of him and driving all of this profit to where he can buy these boats, we got a pizza party as a worker appreciation.
It's always the pizza party.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, that's the classic
I remember during the pandemic at the shelter I was working at, we kept on asking them to buy Yassines instead of the pizza party. We were like, can you please order Yassines? We love them. They're amazing. They're literally the nicest place in America.
All this said, talking about CEO compensation and like you're saying, over the CEO compensation being over 250 times the average worker, Tennessee has a special place in that compensation level because we lead the country in minimum wage jobs per capita. So not only is CEO compensation out the ass when compared to the worker, if you're in Tennessee, you get to benefit even more because our businesses don't like paying people anywhere close to a living wage.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that that the Democrats, frankly, try to fix almost every year. I mean, I can't tell you how many bills that they usually file, you know, trying to increase the minimum wage, and it's just gradual. You know, okay, let's get it to $12 by, I don't know, let's say 2025. I mean, it's these gradual baby steps, but I mean, these bills don't even get a fair shot at a hearing. I mean, you know, it's the whole orchestrated dog and pony show. Let's kill the bill behind the scenes and then we're done. But I mean, it's an insult to countless workers out there who are making minimum wage. And it's not teenagers working at McDonald's. I mean, it's a single mom trying to make ends meet. It's a family with two kids. There's this preconceived notion, I think, of who works minimum wage jobs. And 9 times out of 10, it couldn't be further from the truth.
I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with, but Brad Batt had a really great comment on the working situation. He goes, the people don't want to work has a lot of the same girls don't date nice guys energy.
I like that analogy, yeah.
That is spot on, nail on the head. No, you're not a nice guy. You're actually the world's biggest neckbeard. Like, go away. Go put your fedora on and go away. And Maggie, like what you were saying, these guys like, no, I don't want to go and get my arms splashed in scalding oil and be berated by some PMC soccer mom whose fries weren't quite hot enough. No one wants to get berated by that. And no one should have to. And to do it for minimum wage is laughable.
I think the other issue that people aren't paying attention to with the workers force is that the large amount of the workers force that left the force during the pandemic was women because they are in care positions. They're caretaking for an elderly person that they took out of homes because they were worried that be exposed to COVID in a home. They had to take their disabled sister or son out of a home because they were worried about COVID in the homes. They had to take care of their children because their children weren't in schools at the time. And I mean, if you think about it, there was a statistic that came out and I can't remember what it was, but it was a whopping number of the workforce was women and they all had to leave because of care positions. And then they're mad because they're like, nobody's coming back to work for us. And I'm like, no, they don't want to come back to work for you because they're still in those care positions and you're not giving them a living wage to take care of the people that they love.
Yeah. And those are some of the most important, frankly, I mean, just facts that the supermajority loves to leave out here about, oh, this supposed labor shortage. I mean, Maggie, like you hit on, you know, women left the workforce in droves to care in some capacity for a family member, for children. And like you were saying too, they don't want to, and nor should they have to come back to these jobs and work for minimum wage. I mean, it's insulting, but for elected officials to sit there and just constantly, I mean, almost like a broken record, just say, oh, Tennesseans are lazy, or they'd rather sit at home and collect unemployment, or they just don't want to work. When you hear it, it's nauseating to think that, okay, these are people who have been sent to Nashville to represent their constituents' interests, and this is what they're saying about.
It's heartbreaking and infuriating at the same time, especially as someone who, as a female, if I had a child during the pandemic, I wouldn't have been able to work. It's just what it was. Like, I wouldn't have been able to work because I would have had to been home taking care of my kid and homeschooling them because that's what was happening for a lot of those kids. Tennessee is not exactly doing great as far as their labor laws and then the cuts to unemployment.
Yeah. And yeah, we're ending, the federal benefits end, I want to say on July 3rd. So yeah, we're not exactly we're the poster child sometimes, it feels like, for everything that's wrong with labor laws, unfortunately.
Well, I'm glad you guys brought that up because that's kind of what I wanted to kind of circle back again to at the very beginning with what you were talking about, Alyssa, the constitutional amendment that's going to be on the ballot in 2022, and just the state of labor specifically in Tennessee. Like you said, we are the poster child of what not to do. And I think that's because, like, southern states love to be the hold my beer, watch this amongst each other. One state does something and then another one is going to be like, hold my beer, watch this. And they'll, like, try to one-up each other on being awful to their constituency and to their citizens. And I think this constitutional amendment is kind of the cream of the crop of that in terms of labor laws right now.
Yeah, and I mean, like I was saying earlier, this law has been on the books for, let me try to do math quickly here, I mean, 74 years, 1947. And all of a sudden you want to go and put it into the Constitution. I mean, it's very much a corporate special interest backed political push. I mean, you can't hide it, you know, hide what it is. It's very clear. But, you know, like I said before, too, it's insulting that in the middle of a pandemic, this is what legislators are pushing. This is what, you know, they feel is important to enshrine in the Constitution until, you know, sometime probably long after we're all gone, if it would get in, you know, it ties the hands of future legislators. Putting it into the Constitution just makes it a lot more difficult to take out. But I think sometimes in the supermajority's mind, it almost cements Tennessee status as, you know, we are pro-business and anti-worker. And, you know, actually somebody here wrote an op-ed, I think it was back in March, and he just said, you hear so many legislators get up and say, I'm proudly pro-business. I'm so proudly pro-business. But you never, ever once hear somebody say, hey, I'm pro-worker. I support the worker. And like I said, I think this is almost just the supermajority's way of saying, Gabe, kind of like you said, hold my beer. Well, look how pro-business we are. We put it into our Constitution. I mean, it's just, it really is that quintessential hold my beer moment for Tennessee.
So either Gabe or Alyssa, do either of you, just in case any of our listeners don't understand what right to work is, do either of you want to talk about what right to work is really quick so that maybe they understand?
I'm happy to. I'll try to condense it as much as I can. So right to work laws, they basically originated sort of back during the Jim Crow era. Frankly, they're racist laws. And what they do is they keep wages low. They make workplaces more dangerous. Benefits aren't as good in states that have them. They're not good, but they're phrased so well. I mean, just that phrase, right to work. It sounds good. You think, oh, well, of course I have a right to work. Tennessee's a right to work state. Well, Tennessee's also an at-will employment state, which means that you can be fired at any time for any reason if you do not have the protection of a union contract. So if I work at a business in Tennessee that's not covered by a contract and I go home tonight and dye my hair blue and I come into work the next day, my boss can fire me. You know, they say, well, you know, I'm going to fire you. Well, why? Well, because you know what? I don't like the color. I mean, just for reason or no reason, they can fire you.
The biggest thing is they're not supposed to discriminate you for your sex, age, race, religion, color, national origin, disability. But because of the law, they are able to get around with that with any reason whatsoever. The other thing that it doesn't say, though, is that it doesn't protect you if you are trans or if you're gay. That is not in the law for Tennessee. So if I come out to one of my employers and I say, hey, by the way, I am queer, they're going to be like, oh, okay, well, let me go talk to, you know, our bosses. And then the next day I get fired and I'm like, why? They could be like, you kept messing up the drawer for like 2 days in a row. And I'd be like, okay, well, where's proof? And
you're just not a great cultural fit for us here. We think you would be better suited finding employment elsewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, the biggest thing, I mean, I guess for folks who are listening, again, that may not know, it sounds a lot different than it actually is. They're anti-worker laws. They do nothing to benefit the worker. And they just continue to, you know, we've been talking a lot about this rigged economy and a system that favors CEOs. I mean, that's exactly what these laws do. They keep wages low, make workplaces more dangerous. And they take away the freedom of workers to join together and demand that fair return on their work. I mean, they're horrible, horrible laws. Again, back to the South, you know, trying to one-up each other. Most of the states that have right to work laws are in the South.
One thing that I think is interesting about Tennessee, we haven't really touched on this yet, is also the land of small government and local government is king. Tennessee has some pretty unique laws as it comes to that of big government stepping in, and cities don't have the ability to change their own minimum wages. Chattanooga wanted to raise its minimum wage. It can't do that as a city. if Memphis or Nashville or Rogersville, any city wanted to raise its minimum wage. It can't do that. The small government, you know, big government's bad mentality that permeates the South, and especially here in Tennessee, is another one of those great hypocrisies of it. They won't let cities do what's in the best interest of their own laborers. And when you are a right-to-work state, a at-will employment state, a federal minimum wage state, and the city can't do anything to help their own workers, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you're damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Yeah, and you hit on one of the biggest things, Gabe, which is hypocrisy. If you follow even just remotely the Tennessee legislature, they always, always preach, I shouldn't say they, because I don't want to speak for the Democrats, the supermajority always preaches preemption. They hate it when Washington and big government comes in and tries to tell them what to do in Tennessee. But God forbid, like you were saying, Chattanooga, Greenville, any city in Tennessee wants to raise its minimum wage, you could be damn sure the state legislature is going to step in and say, no, you can't do that. And they are all about really tying the hands of local governments and thinking that they know what's best for the people. And again, kind of back to what we were saying earlier, half of them, they couldn't be more out of touch with the needs of their local communities. And just that hypocrisy. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It really is hypocrisy at its finest, how they tie these hands of local leaders and make it difficult for them to better the quality of life for their citizens.
And most even local leaders don't understand what is happening in their own town.
That's exactly right.
Like Rogersville, when it comes to the local leaders that are there, they don't know what's happening like two streets over. Like they just don't know. It's so sad. They know everyone in the town, but they don't know anything that's happening in the town.
Tying the hands of local municipalities like that is a complete disservice as well, because it's a lot more expensive to live in Davidson County or metropolitan Nashville than it is to live in a Bulls Gap or something like that. Your minimum wage job has very, very different spending powers there. Nashville's like one of the top 10 fastest growing cities in the country. It's quickly becoming one of the most expensive cities to live in because of that population explosion. Either city you live in, your minimum wage is not going to be enough to keep food on the table and a roof over your head. But if you're in one of these major cities where 3/4 of the population of Tennessee lives, Chattanooga, Knoxville, Memphis, Nashville, Johnson City, if you're in a minimum wage job there, you're just the bare minimum of a living.
Most of my friends that work minimum wage jobs have multiple jobs.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what's so frustrating, again, when you hear these legislators say, oh, we'll go take this job. One of the stations here in Nashville, they ran a story and it said the governor and all these top players in the supermajority are saying, oh, you know, there's so many jobs on the Jobs for Tennessee website, go apply. Well, lo and behold, only I think it said 3 of the jobs paid more than $20,000. And I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you've got to be insane. Like, are you serious? I mean, do you truly expect, I mean, an individual can't live on that, let alone a family. I mean, that's ridiculous.
A lot of these workers, they really just need to inherit a multi-million dollar revenue HVAC company from their parents. I mean, that's really going to be the key to success. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, inherit your parents' company so you actually have $0 invested and zero risk, but all of the gains and all of the capital. I think that's the key.
And then just decide to run for governor,
right?
Yeah. So the Tennessee labor situation is just very unique because of how they're trying to lead the country in poor decisions. And it just, going back to what you're saying earlier about the cuts to the unemployment, you know, the federal benefits for COVID unemployment are about to run out here. By the time this episode airs, they will have ended. And then, you know, we already have Mississippi that is one of like 4 states that outright cut the $300 already. And Governor Lee and the supermajority are flirting with that, trying to make that happen here in Tennessee. I mean, so even when their protections do get in place, we have legislators that want to strip them out.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, I mean, we've used this analogy a lot with our members. They see their state rep or their state senator you know, at the grocery store on the weekend, and they give them, you know, a slap on the back, and they're just talking about whatever. And sometimes folks don't realize, I think, what harmful decisions their legislators are making in Nashville and just how it affects their well-being. But Gabe, like you were saying, the fact that it feels like every day, you know, legislators are just trying to strip all these protections out that are in place to support workers. I mean, nobody wants to live on unemployment. Nobody wants to live off of that. But for the folks that need it, it is a lifeline. And it has kept so many people in their homes. It has kept the lights on. It's kept food on their tables. I mean, the maximum amount of unemployment that you can even get in Tennessee is $275 a week. You know, it was funny. I was talking to my husband last night, and he was laid off in 2018, and he had to collect unemployment for a few months. And he even said, he goes, I didn't get $275 when I had to collect. It's very rare to get the $275. And now, you know, they're going to cut it down to where folks can only receive 12 weeks. I mean, that's going to be the lowest in the country when that goes into effect. So not only are you taking away the federal benefits early, not only do you have one of the lowest benefits to begin with in the country, now you're cutting the number of weeks from 26 to 12. Again, sort of back to that hold my beer moment. It's almost like, what are you going to do next?
And it's not like you can find a job like the next day. Everyone thinks like all you have to do is walk out and you'll find a job. That's not how this works. You have to do applications. You have to do referrals. You have to do the interviews, whether likely there's more than one interview. Then you have to do your working interview most of the time. And then if they don't like you, they can fire you within the first 90 days with no repercussions.
And we start all over again.
It's not like it's a good thing. Like 12 weeks is not long enough for you to be able to figure out what you're going to do with your life to be able to provide for yourself or your family.
It's Always Sunny has a really great take on this. You know, you just go down to Jobland and talk to the job fairy and get it and pull a job off the job tree.
That's exactly right. I mean, then they want to see proof that you've been searching for jobs. I mean, they don't make it easy for those who are on. I mean, they almost try to make the system harder and harder and more and more hoops to jump through. I mean, that's obviously by design.
So we kind of talked about like the state and the decay of labor rights and worker rights in the state of Tennessee. I mean, kind of what are some of the things that we can do going forward? We can write our legislators, but half the time those just, you get an auto reply, milquetoast response. I mean, what are some of the things that we can do to take back the labor outside of 1915 strike mentality?
I think there's several things folks can do, you know, kind of bringing it full circle. Like I said, when this right to work constitutional amendment's up next year, vote no. We don't know the amendment number yet. It eventually will have a number like 1, 2, 3, 4. So eventually we'll be able to have really succinct messaging that says, you know, hey, vote no on 2, but we don't have a number yet. So one of the biggest things, please vote no when that comes up, because voting for it is essentially saying that you are okay with enshrining this anti-worker law into our Constitution for the next 74 years. Maggie touched on something really important earlier, and I think something that folks can do is just talk with your coworkers. That's good to do, and I'm really glad, again, that Maggie brought that up, because I think a lot of folks are scared to do that. I mean, and rightfully so, they've been ingrained to think that they can't talk about those things. But I mean, that's one of the biggest things, just that transparency and that openness with your coworkers. It's okay to talk about those things. Know your rights. Know your rights on the job. If you're not sure what your rights are, call us. That's what we're here for. We get, usually when I answer the phone, at least one call a week from somebody saying, you know, hey, I'm in X industry. I want to know how I can organize my workplace. I mean, so there is thirst out there for folks wanting to organize, and they're just either not sure how to do it. They feel like there's too many barriers. The PRO Act's one of those things that would help break down some of that, you know, but I think those are some of the biggest things folks can do. I mean, Gabe, kind of like you said, it's important to contact your state rep and senator. Unfortunately, it is a lot of those cookie cutter responses, unfortunately, most of the time. But I think that being that constant squeaky wheel, as we saw with a lot of our members with Right to Work this year, and being a thorn in their side, even if they don't vote the right way, hearing from the people who sent them to Nashville is important. So I just think those are several things that folks can do. We always say we represent you, you know, whether you're union or non-union. We're here for all workers and want to do what we can to better the lives of all workers in Tennessee.
And I guess if none of that works, then we'll call back to the yesteryear of the CIO and we'll see what happens then.
We may have to.
So there's some good things that we can do in order to try to move our state forward in terms of labor laws. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, there are some people that just need a good old bless your heart. No stranger to union meetings, Charles Koch knows how to provide the most bang for his buck. Whether he's working with Georgia Pacific or oil refiners, Charles Koch will make sure that the union has the least amount of clout at the bargaining table through prolonged work stoppages. Charles Koch, you'll agree to my terms when you can no longer afford to eat. Thank you for hanging with us so far. And to close this out, we've got a few people that just need a good old bless your heart. That way, hopefully, the Lord will see into their heart and they'll see the wrongness of their ways.
It's Bless Your Heart with Bobby June.
Hello, hello. Oh my, you little angels. Look at you, just so wonderful. Thank you. And bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Alyssa, who just needs a good bless your heart for them to make it through?
Oh, I would like to give a nice bless your heart to a neighbor on my street who, I have a miniature schnauzer. She also has a dog as well. And for whatever reason, my dog's very attracted to her yard, let's say, to kind of do his business. And being a fellow dog owner, she felt it was appropriate to stop me on our walk this past weekend and tell me that my dog's no longer welcome in her yard. We exchanged words. So tears for me, words in general. So again, that's a big, big, big bless your heart I'd like to give to my wonderful neighbor. So who's fortunately further down the street. So she doesn't know me that well at all. That's who I'd like to give a good bless your heart to.
That's a well-deserved bless your heart. We have one of those in my neighborhood. They have one of those like signs where it's a dog pooping and it says no, but it's only pointed one direction and I don't walk that direction usually. I walk the other direction. So when I have a foster dog that accidentally poops in their yard, I'm just like, oh no, I didn't see the sign.
We told her to get a sign. We were like, you know what? If you don't like it, get a sign. So I may have to come and steal that sign and let her borrow it for a while.
Maggie, who do you think needs a good bless your heart?
Well, for the month of June, which is Pride Month, I've been doing my makeup for the Pride flags when I go to work. I work at a brewery, just for everyone who knows. And the most recent one that I did was non-binary. And I had somebody ask me about my makeup. And I don't think she knew what it stood for or anything like that. But because she was asking, you know, I was just like, oh, well, it's the non-binary Pride flag. And she goes, oh, well, what does non-binary mean? And I was like, oh, dear sweet Jesus, here we go. Okay, so I explained to her what non-binary is, that gender is on a spectrum and not everybody is a part of the colonialization binary for male and female. And she just looked at me and she goes, I just really hope that one day they'll be able to say that they are either male or female. And I just like, I was like looking at her and I was like, well, ma'am, that's not exactly what they want. They want to be on the spectrum somewhere. And, you know, it varies day to day. So it's okay. They don't have to be that. And she goes, well, all we can do is pray.
Oh.
And I said, oh, honey, no, they're praying for you. So you know what, darling, just bless your heart. You're trying and it's real sweet and all, but you're just not doing it right. Okay.
Yeah, the whole I'll pray for you. That's the one that's just, oh.
Yeah, all we can do is pray. And I was like, no, they're praying for you. They don't need your prayers. I think you need them more than they do.
You just need to let go of all the hate in your heart, and then you'll know who you truly are. That's what's wrong in the world. Too much hate in the heart. Just let me pray for you.
God, it's the worst.
To close this out, for me, if you are a fan of celebrity culture, just bless your heart. We now have entire industries that want to know what Kim Kardashian was wearing when she went out to go get her coffee at God knows whatever bougie cafe she goes to. Because, I mean, we all know Starbucks is probably not good enough. No one cared. No one should care. The only contribution to society that these people have done, for the most part, is be born into a rich family. Keeping Up with the Kardashians, hot garbage of a show. Why does it exist? And not only does it exist, it's been running for 10, 15 years. Why?
It's so terrible.
Why are we wasting resources? Why are you putting ad dollars into this garbage for people to consume? Real Housewives of literally any city in America. Like, we're giving these trash individuals a platform to boost their trash viewpoints and are just creating this beautiful culture of consumerism around the dumbest things. It makes no sense. I don't care what the 0.5% of Salt Lake City's families are getting up to. I don't care. No one should care.
Come on, you just gotta go for the Duggars. Just go for the Duggars. You can't just say Salt Lake City.
This, like, American obsession with celebrity culture makes no sense. 90% of these people don't contribute anything constructive to society. I mean, I railed on Kim Kardashian, but she's, like, actually been doing a lot of advocacy for criminal justice reform. But Caitlyn Jenner? No. The Real Housewives of pick a random city on a map.
Logan, what's his face?
Logan, Jesus Christ, Logan and Jake Paul. Like, no. Stop obsessing over these people. If we ignore these people, they'll go away and it'll be nice. We can move forward at that point. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on, Alyssa. Do you have an internet home or any pluggables for the listeners?
We do. So if folks want to learn more about just the AFL-CIO, what we do, how we can help if you're interested in organizing, just go to our website. That address is tnaflcio.org. And then, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter. So feel free to look us up, like us, interact with us. And yeah, those are my two or three, I guess, pluggables. So stay tuned. We've always got lots of things that we're working on.
Maggie, what about you? Where do you live on the World Wide Web?
So if you want to go see the, let's just be honest, it was stunning, non-binary face makeup or any of the other pride flags that I've been doing over the past month, you can go ahead and find me at LILMISSKNIT, Lil Miss Knit, on Instagram, Twitter. I'm somewhere on Facebook. I don't remember what my handle is. Sorry. And if you're interested in seeing some other, maybe less known pride flags that I haven't done yet, if you comment or if you DM me and you want me to do one, I will 100% do it. And if you want me to tag you in it, I will, because it's been a lot of fun to do and been really creative for me. Also, I'll start making shiny math rocks soon, and you might want to see those.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @pod_south. You can find me on Twitter at @graham851. Also, make sure to leave us those sweet, sweet 5-star reviews, as they help others discover us and hear the sweet siren song of Appalachian leftists. All right, everybody, thank you. Have a great day.
Hot part of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot part of the South, progress cannot wait.